Coming up next on Tech News Today, Apple's earnings crushed, but its projections are even better. U.S. lawmakers want to ensure IoT takes security seriously. Facebook is apparently working on video chat and smart speaker hardware, and all the ways your teenager will use social media wrong and what that might mean when they apply to university. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1822, recorded Tuesday, August 1st, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you what you need to know about technology. Today, I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. How's it going, Megan?
Going pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Apple earnings.
Yeah.
Sitting on a big pile of cash.
You're sitting on a big pile of cash?
No.
Oh, okay. Because you're not Apple.
I'm not Apple, nor do I own Apple stock or any tech stocks, because that would make me impartial. That would be something that would really make me impartial.
Other than just having a strong preference for iOS.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Apple took its turn announcing its quarterly earnings with $45.4 billion in revenue this time around. And that sent after hours trading up 4%. Not only was this a strong quarter with revenue up 7% year over year, Apple is signaling that it expects strong sales of its upcoming iPhone once it's officially announced, and we're guessing that sometime in the next few months. In the meantime, as sales of its iPhones have slowed in recent months, Apple services, they made sure to point out, have risen to fill that void, growing 22% year over year with $7.3 billion in revenue. iPad sales also pitched in. We're not so used to seeing that at this point, but they sold 11.4 million units during the quarter. That's compared to 10 million units this time last year. So that was an increase. Sure, 2% is nothing major, but like I said, iPad stalled for a while. So any growth in that category is good for that category.
And that, we learned a little bit about that too, because it was a 14 to 15%. They were up 14 to 15%. In the amount of iPads sold, but only 2% in revenue. Mm-hmm. So that means that probably the $329 iPad, which is now just called the iPad,
right,
probably sold more than, you know, the iPad Pros.
Sure, sure. iPhone, by the way, at this point has passed 1.2 billion units sold in its lifetime. Tim Cook did kind of an interview with Bloomberg and had some points, but one of them that he was wanted to point out was that the slowdown in iPhone sales, he thought, was likely due to the large amount of rumors and speculation happening about the next device. Of course, only he knows whether the rumors that we've been talking about are true or not. But he certainly acknowledges that people are getting really excited about this next turn, this next major iPhone refresh that is expected to be a full design refresh. Of course, possibly the face detection that we were talking about yesterday, a whole bunch of changes. And that is resulting in people who follow this stuff withholding upgrading at this point. I think in general, this is a pretty slow point out of the year. This is probably, I would guess, the slowest point for iPhone sales, because everybody knows that sometime in September there will be a new device, and if you waited this long, you might as well wait a couple more months.
Yeah, I think Tim just said it's our fault that they're not selling iPhones. And you know, this is every year, but more as you sell more iPhones, more people are connected. The rumors start earlier. There's more tech press. There's more YouTube channels. My boys watch so many YouTube channels that are just like, I have the new iPhone. I have the iPhone 8. It's just like there's so much out there. Yeah. Fake news, if you will. Demonstrably inaccurate representation of the next iPhone. So it's just more and more. It goes back further. Yeah. The more we speculate, the more it's like, oh, I know. Now most people know not to buy a new iPhone right before the new ones come out. So that's basically what Tim was saying.
And then there was kind of a downside to all this, and that's their performance, Apple's performance in China. $8 billion in revenue for the quarter. That's compared to $16.8 billion in the same quarter of 2015. So in 2 years, it's cut in, you know, right around half, which is a big drop. It's the only region to see negative growth year over year. China, obviously, at one point was a really big opportunity for Apple. And I think China is just a really big opportunity for anyone in this space. That's just a huge market. If you can make it there, if you can crack that market. Apple was doing great a couple of years ago. It realizes that it needs to get back there again.
Yeah, China is a big market for anyone who wants to sell anything, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people there.
Yeah, exactly.
A bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers want to introduce legislation to help shore up security on the rapidly growing Internet of Things. Republicans Cory Gardner and Steve Daines and Democrats Mark Warner and Ron Wyden introduced the Internet of Things Cybersecurity Improvement Act of 2017 that will require federal vendors of IoT devices to enable security updates and prevent them from having hard-coded default passwords that are difficult or impossible to change. The bill will also expand legal protections for cyber researchers working to find vulnerabilities in IoT. According to Reuters, we'll be connecting 30 to 40 billion home and car devices to the internet by 2020. So they're wow. coming up with a list of you know, just common sense things that, and then vendors of federal vendors, people selling these devices to government agencies, have to abide by these or they can't purchase these.
Right, exactly. They aren't going to bring these in-house unless they have adhered to these rules, which hopefully lifts the tide for many more of those devices. But when you're talking 20, 30, 40 billion devices by 2020, you have to know that a very large section, at least as it is stands right now, a large section of those are going to be insecure. Hopefully this prevents that from being as big of a number, but it's still such an insane amount of devices. And that carries big impact if it's targeted like it was last year. Mark Warner, who co-sponsored the bill, says that lack of IoT security in devices is an obvious market failure. They aren't doing it, so we've got to get in there. We've got to make sure that they do it, and that's what this is all about.
Right, and the Republicans on this side say, you know, it's going to be a very light touch. They're not mm-hmm. going around, you know, making it impossible to buy these devices just not to be used within, you know, any government company. So any government cars or any buildings. I mean, already they're pretty strict. I have some friends that worked in the White House, and, you know, they're not allowed to wear Apple Watches. They're not allowed to wear Fitbits. It's just like, you just can't do it. They're not allowed to bring their own cell phones in there. You know, they drop them in a bin. So at least there was, in the last administration, a lot of security around wearables and such.
Right, yeah. Many manufacturers are saying that they aren't equipped to build security in the into these devices effectively. Like their business, you know, is built around making devices, but the level into which you have to put work into securing those devices requires a whole, you know, other subset of capabilities. And that's a problem if all these devices are being created and yet even the industry itself is saying, yeah, but we don't have the facilities to, you know, to pay close attention to the security aspects of this in the way that you're asking. I don't know what you do with that. I mean, I guess that just means that there will always be devices that aren't built with security in mind. But that's a big problem when you're talking about the number of these devices that will be out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same argument we hear when we hear, like, we want HTTPS everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then there are a lot of places that it's too expensive for me, you know, to do that. So, you know, it creates this security divide, sort mm-hmm. of. So, but yeah, I mean, this is a good first step, I think.
Yeah. Facebook's experimental Building 8 lab might finally be closing in on the unveiling of its first official Facebook product, at least a little ways out anyways. A video chat device with a touch screen about the size of a laptop screen that would include a smart camera that can track moving objects in its view. The goal would be, they say, to connect, or at least the source of the leak says, the goal would be to connect people in ways that make them feel like they're occupying the same space. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman and Sarah Fryer say the prototype device is already being tested in some homes. I'm assuming employees of Facebook have this in their homes, and that's who's testing it right now. The device could be announced at its F8 conference next spring. And I mean, hey, everybody's kind of doing this whole stuff. Another part of this leak is a smart speaker, which, you know, we've already seen a few of those. That's kind of standard fare at this point. This is Facebook's experimental arm. It's headed by Regina Duggan, who is, you know, the head of Building 8, but was once the face of Google's ATAP division. So she's very known for driving her teams to do very out there sort of stuff. A smart speaker, probably not as out there, and they've, at least depending on this source, has said that maybe because of the growing kind of interest by competitors in the smart speaker space, Facebook would scrap that or postpone that and focus most of its attention on this video chat device.
So, yeah, everybody seems to have a video chat or some sort of home smart device.
Mm-hmm.
Apple's HomePod, you know, will be probably, you know, it's more expensive than the rest of them, it sounds like it's going to be. But so then you have basically the big ones, the Google Home and the Amazon Echo. And then, you know, this possible Facebook. So it really comes down to, like, who do you trust most in your home? Because that's what you're doing when you're putting a device in, especially if you're talking about Facebook. So let's get to the companies that have screens and cameras. It's Google doesn't have one yet. So It's really just Amazon and possibly Facebook. So, like, do you trust these companies? Like, what's more private to you? This is the way I think about it. The stuff that you buy or the stuff that you say and, you know, the pictures that you post. So that's, I think that's going to be the question. For me, I don't want Facebook in my living room.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay allowing Amazon in my living room with a camera and, you know, knowing the things that I'm going to buy from it. And, but, you know, I'm still not 100% comfortable with it, but I'm more comfortable than having a screen with Facebook in my living room. Like, already it's too much Facebook in my life. I don't want any more.
Well, I think for a lot of people, though, Facebook is how you keep in touch with everyone that, you know, that you don't share a home with, right? So I think for a lot of people, it would actually make a lot of sense if Facebook had its own branded hardware, which, I mean, I don't even really think that we've seen any hardware from other than Oculus. Well, Oculus, yes, but they bought that technology, right? This is like some of the first hardware that Facebook's developing in-house. And I could see a lot of people going, well, Facebook's already how I keep in touch with my kids and my grandkids or whatever the case may be. They have a communication device that isn't the phone I already have. You know, that's like an actual on-the-counter communication device where I can just do video chats with all of those same people. I think there's definitely a market for that. And I think people would probably hop on board. I probably would not.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think people will, but I would not.
Yeah.
But it really, that's the question here. Like, who do you, I don't know. It just got me thinking.
Who do you trust?
Like,
do you trust anyone?
Not just who you trust, but like, what information do you trust? You know, because you're not buying things from Facebook. You're handing over a lot of your personal information. You're handing over your connections to people, the things you like, the pictures of your kids. And then they're using that to give to advertisers and then sell you other stuff. So it's more of a where it's like, okay, yes, Amazon knows how much toilet paper I buy and when I buy it. They know what music I listen to. They know what, you know, Amazon TV shows. Now they know what YouTube videos I look at because, you know, I've put that to the Amazon Prime. But they don't. And yes, they know my community if I have a lot of people in my Amazon connections, which I don't, you know, the people that if I spend time calling with the Echo Show, which I haven't really done, they know that. But
because who else has the Echo Show?
Yeah, I know. Well, you can still call. You don't need an Echo Show to call.
I suppose. But there's a little bit of education around that. At least with Facebook, I have to imagine you do this and it would be through Messenger. And you already use Messenger to communicate with X number of people. And so it would be less of like why don't you use this so that I can call you from my kitchen now?
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like Amazon thinks that Jerry is my only friend in the whole world. And I like you, Jerry, a lot. Jerry, who's our creative director. But he's the only person I know that has an Echo Show. So.
Right. Burke has a very valid point. Well, Burke is expressing his opinion. He says he's on board for the Twitter smart typewriter device that may or may not come. We have not heard of this rumor. It's possible Burke has inside information on a smart typewriter home assistant. I'm assuming this is a home assistant, right? Okay. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you just said. Yes, that. And isn't it just kind of like, looking forward in the future, a few years down the line, we're going to have 100 different video chat devices all tied to their own video chat services. And that's just kind of depressing.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's like, if you want to be all in on that video chat service, you have to get that device. No one's going to have the same device. It's going to be the Amazon, you know, Echo Show versus the Facebook, whatever it's called, you know, but to a wider degree, because there's going to be plenty of those.
Well, Microsoft is giving Windows 10 a big accessibility boost. The company announced native eye tracking for people with ALS or other neuromuscular diseases. You'll need hardware for this to work. And Engadget says that because this is a partnership with the Tobii Eye Control, their hardware is the most compatible right now. This is only available in beta of Windows 10 and only works with a Tobii Eye Tracker 4C, but it will eventually work on Tobii DynaVox PCI Mini, PCI Plus, iMobile Plus, and the iSeries. So if you use eye tracking, you probably know what those are. And it's not just, eye tracking is also used for VR and games and such. But this is, they've been working on this since 2014. I sort of remember when I worked for Microsoft that this was a hackathon. And I remember them talking about how that they were going to come up with this eye tracking. So it sort of shows you how difficult this is. It's taken a while, but it'll be exciting when it comes out.
And I don't know if it's Tobii or Tobi, because it's T-O-B-I-I. That only struck. I think I've always called it Tobii, but then when I looked at it today, I was like, Tobi. They've been around for a couple of years. We've been seeing that name and this technology bubbling around here and there. It basically tracks, obviously, where your eyes are looking. You can activate icons, move a cursor with your eyes. And in this update, eventually, it'll be a new standard along with keyboard, mouse, pen, and touch. So it has good company. I mean, obviously, it has really great functionality. Oh, this is a great kind of example of it tracking and opening different windows based on where you're looking and actions related to that. Very good use case for accessibility features, but big open doors and possibilities for things like gaming, productivity. If this is just built into Windows, that opens up a whole other, you know, sea of potential uses. And possibly even when you couple eye tracking with other input methods, just kind of gives you the potential of a deeper kind of interactivity with the OS. And so I'm sure there are things that come out of that that we can't really think of right now, like how that would be useful. But it sounds pretty cool to me.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, helpful tips on making sure your teenager gets into the school of their dreams without their social media history disqualifying them before they do. But before that, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper. They're the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase because you already have the hardware. It's your smartphone with their iOS and Android app. Callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. You simply select a toll-free or a local number. You record a custom greeting. You can add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers, of course, great for marketing. Make your business sound even more professional. You can set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. So all of the phones that you can get your hands on can be your office if you like. You can get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. Join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 per month. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee as well. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support of Tech News Today.
Apple is selling a steady stream of iPhones to everyone in the world, even our kids, but at what cost to them? A few weeks ago, Georgia and I discussed social media addiction in teens, inspired by the piece we read by author, speaker, and professor Lisa Beyer. Lisa just posted another thoughtful article called Seven Surefire Ways Your Teen Won't Get Into College Thanks to Social Media, and she's here to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi, thanks, Megan. Thanks for having me.
So first, are colleges really looking through kids' social media profiles?
Well, according to a survey, at least 35% of the college admissions offices are looking at social media. To what degree? I think it just depends on the college, but I think it's becoming more and more increasing, you know, becoming aware of what they're putting out there, especially with the article that came out about the Harvard admissions, you know, basically taking away the admissions of 10 potential students earlier this year.
So, yeah, the Harvard rescinded a bunch of students because they were posting racist memes and just inappropriate stuff in a what they thought was a private chat, but it was actually a private Facebook Messenger group, which was run by, I guess they all met at the Harvard group, and then they launched off to their own private group. So I guess my question for you, is there any place that is actually private?
I would say no. And I mean, even before, you know, social media has exploded the way it has, I mean, I come from a traditional public relations background, and I always tell my clients, really, there's no such thing as private. If you send something that you think is a private email, a private text message, if you're talking on, you know, a private conversation, you just never know. Things can be recorded, screenshot, forwarded. I wouldn't trust anything today, really.
I mean, it's hard to expect, you know, Megan and I were talking about this prior to the show. I have two daughters, 7 and 4. So I'm a little ways away, but slightly fearful of like, you know, how I steer them in the right direction. And it's hard to think of, at least when they grow up to their teen years, that you can say, also, social media is bad. Don't do it. Don't post, because everything is not off limits to admissions. But there have to be some networks that are better than others because they're going to do it anyways. Are there any social media networks that more than others caused problems for students trying to get into schools?
Well, I think that we've seen with Snapchat, we've seen with Facebook, the larger networks where it's easy to access and see things. For example, Facebook, or things can get, let's say you're on a private group on Facebook and somebody can still screenshot it and then share it publicly on let's say an Instagram account. So things can start private, but then they end up going public. Mm-hmm. So it's a balancing act. I mean, you know, for your kids, there's parental controls on the computer and on the devices. So you can start with that. And then eventually, you know, as they mature, give them, you know, a little bit more freedom. But it's a total balancing act. And I mean, I can just look back 2 years ago, my daughter was 13. I was, you know, I felt very comfortable. I teach social media management at University of Florida. I felt like I was on top of it. But when you read, see if I have the book here. When you read the book by Nancy Jo Sales, Secret Lives of American Teenagers on social media, I was completely shocked at really what's out there. So as a parent, you just have to completely educate yourself and guide your kids through high school.
Yeah, I read that book too. And I didn't read it all the way through when it first came out because it terrified me too much, but I've since gone back.
I was the same way. I think she starts out, chapter one starts 12 years old, and then it goes 13 is the next chapter, and 14-year-olds is the next chapter. So at the time my daughter was 12, I read 12, 13, 14, and then my oldest daughter was 19, and I read that chapter. I was like, oh no. So it's definitely something that every parent should read as just a way to prepare themselves with social media.
Mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, every like media network likes to talk about sexting, blah, blah, blah. But there's something I think that is more pervasive is just the sultry poses. So there's a lot like that's what kids starting so young, like are just somehow trained just by all of this social media to, you know, girls mostly, just to, you know, stick their tongue out or the duck face or just, you know, just these poses that they see everywhere. Could that be something that a college would look at and maybe judge a girl because of it? Because that seems like a little bit sexist, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think it just depends. I mean, if you're striving for a leadership role in high school and you're striving to get scholarships and you're striving, you know, to really be known for, you know, a certain thing, and that's what you're putting out on social media, it's going to send a mixed message. So you have to really look at it like it's a personal branding type of play. And personal branding now is starting, sad to say, in, you know, middle school and high school, because you're already building your brand at that age by building your public profile. And if you do a search on Google, if you do a search on social media, and these are the types of images that are coming up, is that how you want to be portrayed? I mean, some people might not care. Some people, if they're, you know, going to be in theater, that might be something that, you know, they're going to be more dramatic or more provocative. So I think it really just depends on who you want to be and who you want to be known as. And that's where, again, parents need to guide their kids on, you know, how they're going to represent themselves.
Is there any sort of conversation or movement at this point that maybe I'm unaware of parents or people involved in the educational system recognizing that the internet, like kids are connected to the internet at a very young age and younger with every year. So and their schooling is guaranteed to be based around it at this point. You're at a disadvantage if you're not on the internet. Some sort of kind of class around how, I mean, you say building your brand, which is kind of ridiculous when I think about that. Like you're right. A junior high student and you're building your brand. But I mean, that's going to happen anyways. It's just how it is. Is there any conversation around having this be part of the curriculum, how you teach kids to be safe on the internet in that regard?
I mean, I see it in my community. It's starting. I mean, it's definitely the awareness is growing, but I don't think it's to the point where it's going to get to a point where I would say social media education should be right up there with sex education, because really what's happening is it's happening on social media before it's actually happening in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And that's the sad part. So it's really has to be, you know, between the counselors, the guidance counselors, it has to be the community, it has to be the parents all coming together. I don't think that movement is there yet, but I think that it's brewing. It takes a ton of resources to monitor and, you know, imagine being a guidance counselor in middle school. They had their hands full before social media. Now throw in social media and it's almost like another full-time job for somebody.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, yeah, I mean, I can feel some people like Jason sort of cringing at the idea that a kid needs a brand. But, I mean, the earlier you teach them that social media is not real life, the better, because it is. I mean, no one is exactly who they are when they're on social media. That is just a fact. We're not like pretending to be exactly someone that we're not, but we're not who we really are inside when we're on social media.
Exactly. And how we act in real life is completely different. And to have like Georgia was talking about it in the interview, the facial expressions, the eye to eye communication, that is being lost with the screen to screen. And so, you know, what I see happening hopefully is that we're going to get to this breaking point where all of a sudden low tech is going to be the in thing versus everything being so digital.
I completely agree with that. How do we help our children be responsible with social media without pushing them away from plain view and into the darkness, so to speak, or, you know, the kind of the parts that are hard to see on its surface, but still have the potential of being damaging?
Yeah, I wish I had the answer to that. I think that it's still being figured out. Just a couple of the things that I mentioned in the first article was that giving them boundaries, just like you would have a curfew and you have to be in at a certain time or go to bed at a certain time. So I see, you know, a lot of parents don't even realize their kids are on social media basically all night long. And the later you're on it, the more trouble you're going to get into, just like the later you're out on the street or the later you're out at a bar type of thing. So setting boundaries, and there's apps now that you can help your kids, give them the limitations. But I think the most important thing for me right now, if I had to do it over 2 or 3 years ago, I would start the boundaries earlier, because it just kind of happens overnight where they go from being, you know, kind of innocent, and then all of a sudden into an environment that becomes much less innocent. And I think it's the transition from middle school to high school, where middle school, it's a very, you know, they're with 6th to 8th graders, and then all of a sudden they jump to high school, and then, you know, they're in the same school as seniors who are basically almost adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean,
it's a game-changing moment. Yeah.
And that's one of those things that I think technology really hasn't changed. I mean, in terms of like, how do you keep your kids? I mean, we all experience the thing. If your parents are too strict, you're going to try to do whatever you're going to do without them knowing, whether right. It's on Snapchat or out in the real world. Like, that's something that technology hasn't changed. And that's something that I wish that I had the answer to, too. I don't think anyone has the answer to, like, how do yeah. we keep our kids doing what we want them to do? And part of it is they're supposed to do all that. Like, that is their job, to do all these things, try crazy things, and that, you know, not think about the consequences. It is arguably exactly. a little more dangerous now, but
yeah, I think it's much more dangerous. And I think that it's part of the culture. So we can't just take it away and say, sorry, you can't be on social media until you're 18. That's really robbing them of their, you know, the social culture that's happening right now. So it's really just finding that balance and making sure that you stay in touch with your kids and keep guiding them, and also staying in touch with the other parents to make sure that we're all on the same page here and we're all helping each other.
And as you say, they're really, I mean, saying there's no safe place sounds like much scarier, and like it's not a scare tactic. It's just that kids need to know that, yes, like unlike us, when we would go do something in the privacy of our own room, you know, with door locked and no parents around and no cameras and no video cameras, it could just stay there. Whereas now, like if they have a second Instagram account or if they're on Snapchat where things disappear, someone can screenshot it and it's no longer private.
It's no longer private. And they have the fake accounts where they open up a couple different accounts and it's not really them. It's, you know, they're posing as somebody else and posting it there. And so it's a very slippery slope right now with social media.
So do you have any suggestions for keeping your kids' friends from posting things or having your kids' friends take things down that they might have posted?
It's hard with Snapchat because it does disappear. It's very, very hard. That is the social network of choice for teenagers right now, especially in high school. And I'd say seventh, eighth grade is when it starts. So it is almost impossible to monitor the content that's going on Snapchat. I would say just, you know, checking in with your kids and checking their profiles on Instagram, if they are on Facebook, which most teenagers aren't on Facebook until maybe their senior year. So you kind of have to be a little bit of a spy with them and build trust and get to a point where you feel like, okay, they're doing okay. But watch for red flags.
So you also had a really interesting suggestion. You suggest teenagers should have a LinkedIn account. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I'm actually helping my daughter tonight set up hers. So LinkedIn just opened up the network to 13 and older. So colleges and universities are now using LinkedIn to look at somebody's, you know, almost like a resume. What have they achieved in high school? What sports were they on? What clubs were they part of? Where did they volunteer? And then students, high school students, are using LinkedIn to research universities. So, and another bonus with LinkedIn is that it's heavily weighted with Google search. So that's a way to really make sure that positive search results are going to come up first in Google if somebody Googled your child's name on, let's just say, doing a search for them. If it was a college admissions or if it's somebody just kind of checking out their reputation, you can control your reputation by signing up with LinkedIn early, and that way that'll help you have positive search results. So there's multiple benefits for being part of LinkedIn, and it's also giving them kind of a glimpse at a professional network, which is completely different than Snapchat. And I'm not anti-Snapchat. I bought stock in Snapchat. I think Snapchat does have value. Do I think it has value for teenagers right now? I think no, I don't see that value with Snapchat. But LinkedIn is a way to really teach your kids about careers and what are they thinking of for college, and showing them what it looks like to actually, you know, putting together a reputation, a resume for themselves, for preparing themselves for college.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for writing both of these pieces. They're both up online. Is lisabayer.com the best place to find your work?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Awesome. Thanks. lisabayer.com, at Lisa Bayer on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great night.
You
thank
too.
Thank you, Lisa.
Take care.
Take care. All right, feedback time. Jerome wrote in about the discussion you and Owen had while I was out about Elon Musk's Hyperloop turning people's brains to jelly. He says, there is no danger of squashing humans at the speed of the Hyperloop that the Hyperloop will travel. The speeds at both ends will change gradually. Remember the space shuttle? To achieve orbit, the speed had to be in excess of 18,000 miles per hour at the end, gradually attained 25 times Hyperloop speed. And the speed at which the Apollo missions escaped Earth orbit and returned to land on Earth reached 25,000 miles per hour at some point, 35 times Hyperloop speed. But we have not had any brain-addled astronauts yet. I added the yet because it's always fun to put a yet at the end of something like that.
Yes.
But very good point. Very good point.
So AirPods are pesky little buggers. I love mine, but they only work when I hold my head very still, or sometimes I duct tape them to my ears and they work. If you lose one of your AirPods, you can either replace it for a whopping $69 for one, Or you can do as this internet hero, Tyler Efford, did. Behold his film, Saving Private AirPod. He has used Snapchat, the aforementioned yes. Snapchat, as a medium for his film. So these are together, Snapchat. And he created this device with a super strong magnet, an electromagnet, I guess, and some welding. See, there it works.
There's a button on the side that he can push to turn on or off the magnet.
Mm-hmm. And he did some fishing at first. He caught a nail. It worked with the nail. So now he's doing some more soldering.
So what happened here? He dropped his AirPod out the window out the and window, down yeah, into like down, a
whatever
a
those spaces
well.
Are. And, yeah. And is that what it's called?
Like a light well or light something. Well. Yeah, right. It's like a little channel where all the windows look into a wall, but the top is open to the sunlight, so you get a little bit of light through there.
Yeah, there's just 1,000 AirPods down there.
And apparently it worked. Lol, it worked.
Oh, thank you so much for that. The title is the best. Tyler, Saving Private AirPod.
Ha ha. PC Guy in chat says, sigh, another vertical video. Well, yeah, it was shot for Snapchat. You're doing it wrong if you're doing Snapchat and horizontal, mm-hmm. as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't quite translate once you put it into a horizontal player on the web. But there you go. The video, you get what you get.
Everyone's being trained. I mean, beyond all the scary things we talked about with Lisa, they're also being trained on vertical video.
What is going on? That's
teach
the topmost reason.
Your children. Teach your children. If you teach them anything.
No, but then if they're spending 100% of their time on that device, that just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
I get it. I get the need for, here we go again, it's Brian. Thanks.
It's much better.
Thanks.
That's what's
right. All right. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at... you're going to switch it on me, huh? 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
Hey, did you know you could subscribe to our show? You can.
Yeah, you can.
Go to twit.tv/TNT. And tell a friend to subscribe and subscribe to Jason's other show, which comes on right after this. It's called All About Android.
Yeah, you could do that.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to tweet at me about things you've lost that no electromagnet can ever find, please do. I'm at Megan Maroney.
We need more hope than that. I think electromagnetics can find a whole lot more than you're giving it credit for.
Love lost.
I've had Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Brian Burnett for verticaling the show. Thanks to Burke for occasional Burke chat and helping out here in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you, yes, you, for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Is he laughing?
No, that's Saving Private.
He just dropped his AirPod. He's sad.
I dropped my AirPod.